Welcome to the Tech Vittori podcast, where we will explore the hottest topics in connectivity and digitalization with some of the industry's leading minds.
Now, let's talk about real-world AI success in Europe. And we have a very distinctive panel. And please welcome moderator Laszlo Ignacy, independent expert, who will take over from here.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for this. Let me start with a very short story. That long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, was a fresh graduate electrical engineer with passionate thoughts about telecommunications and with a dream to have an impact on the daily life of the people with those electronics and digital devices and applications being developed at that time. So actually, this was the very same galaxy, but it's true that it was far, far away, and that a young gentleman was me. I ended up lately in the regulatory side of this telecommunications domain, and I was happy to serve for 10 years as the director of the EU agency that was established to provide support to the national telecom regulators within the European Union to implement the telecom framework. And that EU agency is one of the decentralized agencies called the BEREC office, and it is located here in Riga. So I am extremely happy to return to the city and moderate this distinguished panel and to talk about artificial intelligence. That's indeed linked somehow to the telecom. So against this background, you are not surprised that we will start from the telecom, but we will quickly widen the scope, broaden the scope to much broader AI topics. And we will talk about applications that are ready for use or around the corner. We will touch the digital sovereignty aspects. We will also talk about public policy tools and expectations in that regard. And I think that you agree with me that this panel is very well balanced to address these aspects, as we have, and let me quickly introduce the panel members, as we have Mr. Juris Binde from LMT, who is the president and chairman of the board of the telecom operator in Latvia. We also have Jaroslav Ponder of ITU, who is the head of the ITU Europe office in Geneva. We have, it's a different order, so we have Anselm Fenker, if I pronounce it well, from Hamburg. He's working for ARIC. ARIC is the Artificial Intelligence Center in Hamburg. That's a not-for-profit organization with public and private members. And he's a senior AI project manager there. And we have Boniface Deschampri from the Computer and Communications Industry Association and the CCIA Europe office in Brussels. He's a senior policy manager there. So you see that this panel is quite balanced to discuss the topics from different perspectives. Although it is quite visible that we are not so balanced from another perspective. Unfortunately, this is not a gender-balanced panel. I see, I know, and this is a problem, I admit. And I have to tell that this is despite all the efforts, and we have to do more, I understand. I hope that when the audience will engage, then we can heal a bit this unbalance. So I encourage all of you to use those tools that Vardis kindly introduced at the beginning, to ask questions, to suggest topics to discuss, because we would like to engage you during the panel discussion, not only at the very end. So around midterm, as what is already presented, I will ask for the main topics, for the main questions, for you to have an impact on what we are going to discuss in the second half of the discussion. So, after all this introduction, now I will kindly ask Juris to provide some keynote thoughts, share with us his perspectives and bring us to a historical journey as well. And after that, we will continue with reflections and the discussion. So, Juris, please, the floor is yours now.
Thank you, Laszlo. Hello, everybody. I would like to introduce a little bit about the historical issues and how the technologies, ICT technologies, were developing. And we always, more often we are talking about the telecommunication technologies and IT. But in fact, those, these two curves were developing in parallel. And looking at this slide, the second, third, and fourth generation of the telecommunications technologies were developing step by step from the circuit switching principles to more similar than ICT industry. And the another curve shows that how the IT developed, starting from the web systems, then moving to cloud native systems, and later on now about the artificial intelligence and machine learning. And you see that these curves were are coming more and more closer. There is less difference between the telco industry and IT industry. And there is a, one interesting crossroad when the second, third, and fourth G era is ending, and 5G era is starting. And it's very, very interesting and very important point, because the first four generations were for the human beings, for practicalities. 5G is not for human. 5G is for robots, for different sensors, for different devices, for the software. And at this point, we are looking that it will these two technologies, IT tech, IT and communications, are completely merging. We have no switching centers anymore. We have servers. There are no switching equipment. We have software, and this is a good cornerstone and stepping stone for the development of the next generations. Very briefly, I can tell you, I will tell you about the way how artificial intelligence can be used for the different purposes. It's a practicalities. It's not a theoretical discussion. All these solutions are implemented. Before I'm talking about some practical things, let's talk a little bit about the definition. What does it mean, artificial intelligence? In most cases, everybody understands something different. We're talking about the large language models, about the social manipulating and profiling and so on. In fact, artificial intelligence is software with an adaptive function which can learn, let's say, learn, and to add information, and on a basis of this information, build new algorithms and to give the answers to their questions. So. But in most practical way, the artificial intelligence intelligence solutions are can be used in a very small sizes. For instance, for the first on the left upper corner, you can see this picture, where the drones are supervising the safety situation on the waters. This artificial intelligence combined with the computer vision is identifying how many swimmers are going into water and how many swimmers are coming out from the water. And if there is some difference, they this drone is giving the information to the rescue center. And all the artificial intelligence is located in a drone. So the next two slides are showing how artificial intelligence, AI, can be used as on a big data, analyzing the movement of the people. And it was interesting to compare how this density and movement of the people was during the normal times and how it changed during the COVID times. And the last one is about applications of AI, which can be used for the radio network designing. It's designing of the radio network is engineering, but it's also some kind of art, because it's not a normally it's not a flat area, but we have to build the network in very complicated areas. And therefore, artificial intelligence is very useful for modeling how the base stations will operate. This is very, very concentrated introduction for our further discussion. And just to show that this is not a fantasy, this is not something in the future, it's already in place and it's working already for several years. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Yuri. Indeed, this is a great confirmation. I don't think that our audience would need that confirmation, but still it is important to make it that there is AI beyond the general purpose AI and beyond the hype that we see about AI. So those applications, those solutions that work behind, sometimes invisibly for the end users, are really, really important for the sector. And there were many topics that you addressed already on this very dense slide that we can come back later on. So I kindly ask the other panel members to take your opening statements and reflect on certain topics that you saw in the slide. First, Jaroslav, if you don't mind, you would be the next to show another dimension, because Yuris brought the operator's perspective, and now you can bring something from the public body's perspective, please.
Thank you very much for this, and good morning to everyone. Of course, as the representative of the International Telecommunication Union, which is UN Agency for Digital Technologies, it's obvious that we are dealing with the 194 countries on the daily basis. But what is more specific to our organization is that within the UN system, we are the strong believers in the power of the private sector, because whatever innovation is coming on the daily basis on the market is thanks to them. The innovation is driven by the private sector. And of course, the role of the governments is to create an enabling environment and to foster innovation and to make sure that the regulations coming on the market are not harming those who are sitting long nights in the research houses working around the solutions to be launched on the market, and they don't want to be surprised to be blocked from the implementation and commercialization. Therefore, we're very much pleased to have also in our platform, apart from the 194 governments, also over 1,000 leading tech companies, including network operators, including the AI companies, which are coming massively. Now we are observing on a daily basis a lot of small, middle companies entering the ITU, and they are entering with the one objective. They want to work with the global community on the global standards, following the regional regulatory frameworks, following the regional prerequisites, but still already taking a look in the future, because the future is the global. The digital does not know the borders, frontiers, and those which are created, they're very easy to remove once we are reaching the consensus-based interoperability between the systems, and this is the role of institutions like the United Nations, UN agencies for digital, to work around this. And this brings us, to, of course, to the governance model and the debate on the models which we should have and which we should strive for. and to make sure that scale-up of the AI implementation is not harmed by any kind of the politicization of the discussions. Yeah. Of course, there are the sovereign rights of the countries to have different views, but these are also their obligations to be at the table and to discuss all those issues in such a places like the ITU. And ITU's journey with the artificial intelligence, of course, didn't start when we started to talk in the media on the AI. It came very much earlier in the history, as our colleagues from already were mentioning, the history of the network optimization. These discussions were coming already 20 years back in the research houses, where we are taking a look with the telco operators how the network can be designed in order to optimize the traffic, routing, and routing. And this is something what was happening. Nobody understood that this would be the next hype. So, of course, several years back, we took a look at this systemically as the international telecommunication, which is, of course, driven by the governments, which are giving us indications what they would expect from such an international organization to do. And still, when we are retrospectively taking a look, they were developing their understanding, yeah, what AI in fact is, what does it mean for them. A lot of countries were in the process of developing their own strategies at the national level, not knowing what does it mean for the international market to be and on what to agree and what not to agree. One item is very clear. The capacity building is key here, and the skills development is the key. Therefore, I think there is a lot of efforts going in this direction and to take a look how those solutions which are brought to the market can solve the global problems of the nutrition, of the safety, of the health. So different sectors are becoming now the native digital advocates, which were dreaming as the ITU for years, advocating, please understand why the broadband is important for you. When I was starting in the ITU, this was our call to the governments and to the Minister of Health. Now the Minister of Health is coming and explaining how they are embedding this in the national strategy, of course seeking the technical advice how to make this in the best way. So there is definitely a lot of homework to be done at the regional level. We are very proud of coming from the Europe, which is the symbol, global symbol of the harmonized approaches for the emerging technologies, where those discussions are already taking a look when the technologies are still in the research houses. We should be proud of this because it's not easy to harmonize by the end of the day. When you're taking a look at the other regions, those debates around the AI approaches, they are still ongoing, while the Europe has already one way of approaching the AI, for example, or quantum or the other technologies. Of course, the other side of the debate is it good direction, yep, but there is the direction. Yep. And this is the most important for the all panelists here sitting, because they need very stable, enabling environment to be able to adjust, to accommodate, to incorporate this into the investment models, and then to take a look how and to launch on the market. This is what makes sense for the citizens, the customers. On the other hand, keeping those customers in safe, not scaring them, educating them step by step, and then by the end of the day, increasing the AI implementation at the level of region, but also exporting a lot globally.
Absolutely, and very, very good fruit for thoughts in your introduction, Yaroslav. Just a couple of topics that we can further elaborate later on. You talked about the standardization. And then, well, we can refer back to the panel discussion in the morning when it was already raised that that might be that the AI domain is overregulated, whether the standardization is a good way away from overregulating or not, and what would be the pros and cons. You talked about the skills, importance of the skills, where end users, businesses, or and government or public bodies, and so on. So very interesting topics to talk about. First, we go further, and then then we will link these dots in the second round. So Anselm, please.
Yeah, perfect. Then also welcome from my side. My name is Anselm. I'm from the ARIC, the Artificial Intelligence Center Hamburg. And from background, I'm a computer scientist. In the last years, I helped a lot of different companies to implement AI solutions, from startups to small and medium-sized enterprises and big companies from all different kind of areas. And at the moment, we are in a really, really interesting time because on the one side, we have the classical AI solutions, like, for example, estimated time of arrival prediction in public transport or resource optimization in the port, where you need really company-specific data and company-specific knowledge and then train a model, which then only will be used by a few people who operate the system, and this system then makes predictions which have a really, really big impact. Now, since a few years, we also have AI that is used more general, for example, like internal ChatGPT solutions in companies or some knowledge management solutions or, for example, a translator app as we are using it at the moment. And these are different kind of AI solutions because not every company is training them themselves, but they are publicly available and companies can buy them and adjust them. And then everybody in the company is using them. Every single employee is using it to, for example, write an email or program some code. So it's a completely different process for companies in order to get these AIs. And it's much more also a governance task because you only not just have a few qualified people that operate these AI systems, but you have everyone in the company using these AI systems. And at the moment, I think every company in Europe will use AI in the future and will have both kind of systems, the very specific ones and the more wider one. And we are at the moment at a point where we need to think about how do we need some regulations, how do we need some rules in order to use them responsibly.
Great. And it is great that you have this this on-field experience in Hamburg area about these partnerships between the public bodies and the private users. Just to share a little story with you that I met the company. They are downstairs with a booth in the drone business. And it was also on Ulysses' slide. So this is rooted in telecom, but you see that it is not just telecom. So in the drone business, they suffer, they say, not just of the over-regulated telecom digital domain, but also the aviation over-regulation or the strict regulation in aviation. So it is not just as simple as easing the digital rules. It has also links to other regulatory domains. And probably test beds or regulatory sandboxes might be a good solution.
Yes.
But we might come back.
We can come back to this later. But yes,
if there would be an interest, a lot of topics. We might not have time for everything. So Boniface, now the floor is yours to make your first reflections.
Thank you. So I'm Boniface, and I work for the Computer and Communications Industry Association, which represents a broad cross section of tech companies, including some of the leading AI developers out there. And as we've seen, we are really in the midst of a revolution, a technological revolution, with already a lot of real AI applications, for example, in the telecom sector, but also beyond. I'm thinking of robotics, defense, healthcare, for example, and so many other specific sectors and industries where using and applying AI actually really boosts productivity, competitiveness ultimately, and innovation. And so today in Europe, one specific challenge that we observe is that around 13% of companies, a bit more than 12% for SMEs, actually adopt AI and use it. And so this is where the real revolution actually will take place. It's when companies actually use it and apply it and to transform their industries, their processes, and to boost really their productivity. So we are seeing indeed already very concrete examples of successes, but we need more support also from policies, from regulators, in order to boost adoption, improve skills, this was mentioned, make sure that we manage to get global standards for companies to operate globally, to mm-hmm. scale quickly, develop something in Latvia and offer it in the US in a week. This is where standards can help a lot. And of course, also for Europe, reducing the regulatory burden that currently lies on companies and make sure that our innovators here can really continue to innovate and scale.
Yeah, all right, so good reflections indeed. We shall definitely come back to reducing the regulatory burden and the pros and cons and the ways how to do that.
Entering into the discussion, but I think that you raise very pertinent issue, development of the standards, which our European discussion is very much focusing, how to get innovation to the market, how to go to the global, how to commercialize this, everything. And however, when you're taking a look at the standards development, I think we need stronger engagement of the industry in the standard setting. I will be frank, we are missing. Yes, we need much more of attention being given to this innovation which is coming from Asia, Americas, mm-hmm. and the other regions, which are perceived as maybe by many European companies as the competitors. But once the Europeans are not at the table, we can't blame anyone that somebody is developing global standards once we are not part of this discussion. So I think that a lot of attention requires, in particular in this very important moment when the technology is taking off, that the European industry, leading institutions are at this table in the discussions on the standard, technical discussions, but also at the regulatory discussions.
Both.
This is the reason why these governance issues require that the European voice is there, also showing the level of flexibility to reach the consensus of the global approach.
Got it.
And this would be my call also to the all private sectors being here. Just investigate what for such institutions like ITU, like ISO, like IEA are doing in the field of the artificial intelligence. We are working together. It's not that we are invading the space and making sure that we are monopolistic on this. We're working together. We have the World Standard Cooperation Agreement with them. There is the database of the over 700 standards related to the AI. ITU is contributing with over 250. Of course, there is the space for these researches, which is happening at the European space, to be translated into the global standard.
Good point. Yeah, all right. Thank you so much, Jaroslav, for this reflection. I think, well, we could choose multiple paths to continue from here, but this would be the right moment to check where is the discussion amongst the audience, and then to see what are their questions and comments and expectations towards us, and try to reflect on those in the second half of the discussion. So, Wadis, please.
So, it was mentioned already that, yes, we do have a direction. Yes, we have guardrails. Yes. But one of the most popular questions is, who's driving it? So are we just observing the progress, or there are becoming more and more operators using AI? Yeah. So that is one question. Do we have a driver, or are we just observing and putting the rules? For example, you mentioned aviation. In aviation, if you come in with a totally, totally different technology, it takes 15 years to regulate it, and only then it could be applied. Mm-hmm. So where will we be in 15 years? Then the next one is, I would say there's many questions on skepsis about the precision of AI, for example, on government-level documentation. Are we going in a direction where efficiency and cost savings are more important than being precise? So maybe the margin for error is being pushed forward because the efficiency goes up, and we're saving money no matter how many mistakes we made.
All right.
So these are two, I would say, sentiments coming through.
All right, okay. Thank you so much, Wadis. So, that's sets an avenue for us to continue. But indeed, so to come back to the first point, it is something about the European way of doing things or not, and within Europe, whether it should be let the markets, the private sector lead, or shall the public sector think in advance with regulations and standards and all these kind of things. So this is that domain. I don't know if, well, who would like to reflect first on that? I know from preparatory talks that you would have some expectations and comments, so perhaps we start with you.
Yes, thank you. There is a different approach how to regulate AI. Mm-hmm. In the United States, it's a profit-based model, basically, or profit-driven model. In China, for instance, it's a government-controlled model. The European AI Act, which is adopted by the parliament, it's human-centric. And I think that the truth is somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. And if you are talking about what is the driving force, the driving force most probably is a private-public partnership.
Okay.
And to avoid some mistakes, which are quite popular in different regulatory documents development, it's very important to have so-called sandboxes, mm-hmm. where we can test different solutions in a smaller scale, then we can scale it for a bigger ones, and with a wider approval. And we also have to consider there is no one artificial intelligence. There are different artificial intelligences for industry, for industrial purposes, for the social purposes, for the mm-hmm. mother. And for instance, there was an example about the aviation regulations. All the aviation regulations are written by blood. It doesn't mean that we have to write all the other AI regulations by blood, but we can try it on the sandboxes as wide as possible. And therefore, the open source AI is a good solution for everybody to test it. Of course, there must be some control not to be used for the bad purposes, but as more people and companies will be involved in this process from different areas, mm-hmm. governments, public, private, individuals,
yeah.
we will get better results. Otherwise, even if you're looking at AI can develop better model if AI has more information.
Yeah.
And this is the same case.
Yeah, very good point. And I saw your body yes. language, Anselm, that you wanted to reflect on this.
I also wanted to add something on the sandboxes.
Yes.
Maybe for those in the audience who haven't heard sandboxes before, that's a specific legal form that's mentioned in the UAI Act, which is supposed to enable regulatory learning. So on the one side, we have the companies who want to develop AI products as fast as possible and also develop them in a good quality and be compliant. But they don't really know what exactly means compliance. There are different kind of rules, what exactly applies, in which order do I need to do this. And on the other side, we have the regulatory offices. They also have an interest in that local companies develop AI solutions, high quality, good AI solutions. So they don't want to stop them. They just say, okay, we need to have mm-hmm. some mm-hmm. forms of regulations in order to ensure how this works. And also for them, many of these fields are new. If we talk about drones and AI, for example, there are some rules there yet. There are some things that still need to be figured out. Mm-hmm. So these regulatory sandboxes enable a form where they can learn together, where they can have a look on how this works together with the goal to decrease the time to market of new AI solutions.
So, this is indeed a good theory and the definitions. Can you bring some real experiences and real projects
hopefully.
From Hamburg?
Yeah. Hopefully, at least. At the moment, we are developing two AI sandboxes in Hamburg, one for life science, one for autonomous systems, so two fields where you have a lot of different types of regulations, not just the UAI Act. And we're starting it at the moment. I'm really looking forward to see it in action and hope it holds up what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
And just to add to this, we have just concluded the Global Symposium for Regulators in Riyadh, which brought over 1,200 representatives of the regulatory authorities. And the sandboxing was something what most of the regulatory authorities was mentioning as the tool of the future. So I think that we'll be going in this direction. We are very much happy also that the European Commission is supporting certain piloting of those tools elsewhere, not only in Europe, but also elsewhere, with some projects supporting, for example, Latin America with our support, with the focus on AI.
Yes.
So it's great development to see this partnership building. On the other hand, also in the standard setting mechanism, the dialogue between the government and the private entities, this is the key. Yes, of course, the government has always the right in the intergovernmental setting to say yes, no, maybe, change. But in case we are not providing this setting, I think this would be difficult. In our case, we have several focus groups which are addressing exactly those use cases requiring special knowledge of the non-traditional stakeholders coming to such a platforms like ITU in emergency telecommunication, in the fake news recognition, in also health, education. These are the stakeholders who never would arrive to the ITU as a standard setting body dealing originally with technologies linked to the telco, but these days more transiting towards the AI ecosystem.
All right, okay. Good, Boniface, I see you.
Maybe, I'm not sure I will be provocative, but coming back to the question of who's driving AI innovation adoption, for me it's industry, it's companies, it's innovators. They drive and they innovate. And in order to do so, they need clarity and they need certainty. And today, especially in Europe, we have we face complexity, too much complexity when it comes to regulation, which other areas of the world do not have as a constraint. And this is quite problematic. I think 1 year ago at Techritory, one of my colleagues spoke on a panel about adoption or policies for AI adoption in Europe, 1 year ago. The Commission came last week with an apply AI strategy, so 1 year after. In the meantime, other jurisdictions continue to innovate. Companies and other parts of the world continue to innovate. So in the EU, we've largely focused on regulation, which is good, as long as it brings clarity. Today, this is really questionable, whether this brings clarity, and we see that there is an effort to simplify and ease the regulatory burden, and this was addressed earlier at the opening ceremony or so.
At least that is the commitment and the intention to do that. That's good, indeed. Well, we also talked about, Yuri, you talked about regulation or rules written by blood, whether this is the right approach or something in between. So over-regulating, of course, is not desired. Non-regulation, so let the private markets flourish and proceed, and let's see how many people will die and what will be the disasters, and regulate only after that. That is also not a European way of doing things, so it's a no-go, something in between, right? And this is what I understood from your conversations, that that the regulatory sandboxes and the test beds and the PPPs, so public-private partnerships, might be the good in-between solutions. It's a question of speed, right? So whether is it fast enough or not, and what can we do, or what the public policymakers can do to make it quicker? Or what will be the expectation from the private market towards the public bodies? So any of thoughts to share would be welcome.
I can just very quickly say, I think we would be very much happy to see in many countries, I'm not talking about Europe, those dialogues are happening. I think that the policymakers are well-trained, those who are dealing with AI, they know the expectations of the market, but those expectations have to be also discussed in the other markets where the potentially European-driven innovations will be going. And those dialogues require also strengthening of the capacities of understanding challenges of the AI in the developing countries, in those countries who will be consumers, who will be driving and welcoming the innovations also from such regions like Europe. Therefore, capacity building is key in this case. Transfer of the expertise to the other continents is another strategy which requires much more attention, much more push, much more visibility, that the understanding of this, what language we speak, is there. Like this, the adoption of the technologies in the other regions will be much easier, and also the dialogue at the policy level, at the governance level, will be much easier. Next year, in July, we'll host the global dialogue on AI as a formal part of the process of the United Nations. We're expecting a lot of people, but this will be the discussion of the leaders coming to debate AI. What makes us happy that this will be complemented by the hopefully over 16, 20,000 of the entrepreneurs actively providing on the market solutions. And there is the hunger of the solutions based on the AI. People understand the potential. But to get the commitment of the other countries to purchase the services, Europe-driven, with the Europe-driven approaches, I think this requires still some homework. And we will be, of course, happy to see this engagement coming.
And when you talk about capacity building and knowledge transfer, the target of these initiatives is the public sector or the overall
I think we
society?
Have to start, well, there are the different layers. For us, of course, the starting point is always the public sector. Regulators and the government officials. Thanks to the support of the European Commission, we're working very closely with DigiConnect, INTPA. We're having some program where we're training the public officials from the, across the world on the artificial intelligence governance models and on the challenges, regulatory including. We just completed the in-depth training of the 30 public officials from 30 countries. Not 30, but there were 70 people from the 30 countries who are decision makers. As soon as they start to understand what level of responsibilities is on their shoulders, we are on the safe side. This is something what we have to achieve together.
And we expect that in Europe, in the public domain of the European Union, member states and EU institutions, we are quite advanced with this knowledge already and understanding of the AI challenges, right? So there's the expectation. Or is there anything that that is still to be done on that level?
I think, well, it's difficult to assess me as the international organization. But definitely we see the leadership in this field. In comparison to the other regions, we're very proud of this. Our role is to make sure that the European region is using global platforms in the appropriate way as the opportunity, opening the markets also and opening the hearts of the others to compromise on certain concepts. As our colleagues were saying, there are different approaches towards the AI. And we have to, at a certain moment, to see how interoperability is coming into the play and how those global standards can be really transformed into the market solutions. And this is something what we are interested in.
Maybe with respect to the time, I would like to address also the second question asked.
We will have time for that.
Was if AI speed in AI development sometimes also has a problem with quality of the results. And I will there also mention the idea of the different risk class of the UAI Act, because depending on where we want to use AI, we need to have different quality. For example, if we take the AI translation we see at the moment and we have it for like something like this, people can follow our discussion, then it's maybe okay if the AI sometimes make a mistake. But it's nice for everyone that we can use it. If we would have the same use case in, for example, life science, and doctors are using it in order to transcribe everything they're saying, and based on this transcription, there's a decision made about what kind of medication is giving, then a mistake has a lot of different, it's a lot of different mistakes than if they just do a little mistake with what I'm saying. So that's really, really important that you have this different risk class, and that depending of where you want to use AI, you have a different trade-off between speed and development and quality of the result.
Well, this is indeed a very good point. And if I may come back to you, Yuri, if you can share with some experiences on those projects that you presented on your second slide from this perspective, on speed and quality concerns, how satisfied were you with the joint initiatives with public bodies speed-wise, and whether you would have any expectations or requests towards the public bodies in that regard?
Well, it's a very interesting question, how to balance the speed and the quality. And mentioned example about the computer vision, which is, for instance, identifying some cancer signs in the rentgenograms and so on. It's a very, very high price for the mistakes. However, for the industry, industrial solutions, it's, to my opinion, a little bit more easier because the criteria are defined by the technological process. And there are some places where you don't need very high speed, but you need very high accuracy, and vice versa. So it's mainly depending on the particular technological process. And I don't think that there is necessary some specific regulation for industrial issues.
Okay.
Another issue is concerning the social approaches and where the public people are getting approach to the AI. For instance, if you are ordering to ChatGPT some receipt for the food, in fact, the ChatGPT is not inventing the new food. It's just combining something.
Yes.
In most cases, you can eat this. But it can happen so that it's not eatable at all.
It could be dangerous as well, yes, absolutely.
So, and this is another issue where the regulation must be more precise, but it must be based on the experience. Of course, not a bloody experience, but on the sandbox experience.
All right, thank you so much for these reflections. So now we got a couple of minutes for further reflections from the audience. Questions, topics that we can quickly address in the last remaining couple of minutes. Wadis, please.
So the key words of this discussion panel was real world EU success on AI. So what is the thing we can leave this room and discussion with and go out and say, see this? So, and also, what are the real AI tools made in Europe, for Europe, we can use? Because, of course, if we talk about sensitive data, we cannot use online AI tools. So this is our last question from the audience, repeated again and again.
Thank you. Thank you. Very relevant question, reflecting back to our main title. Boniface, if you perhaps you can share some of your thoughts and ideas, not necessarily from the telecom, but in a broader scope.
Indeed. Well, I think the public sector has a key role to play, really. Mm-hmm. So what is needed is to invest in infrastructure, invest in skills, educate the population, really, and ease the regulatory burden. And then, of course, we have many, many innovators in Europe. If we look, Europe is one of the places where most startups are created. Mm-hmm. What is needed now is really helping them scale. Many today leave to establish themselves in the US, for example. Many, if we look at the big AI developers, many of the top scientists and researchers are European. So we have the talent. It's about retaining and really nurturing this talent. And when it comes maybe to sensitive data use, I think, again, it's really about making a clear distinction between off-the-shelf tools that you can have by registering on whatever platform, where I would strongly discourage you from uploading sensitive data, but there are specific applications or platforms or subscriptions for businesses, there's always a possibility to have your own models or apply AI for your own specific sector with your own data without it being shared or used for further training. So this is an important distinction.
Got it.
Are those standalone systems?
Yes.
So are they standalone systems you can like buy and use and be sure that those are staying within your network?
Today, yes. If you look at the offering of the vast majority of AI developers, they can, for example, even install a model on-premise, like it's in your whatever office or plant, and the model is used by you only, and the data stays in your office, for example. Mm-hmm. It's very different than if you use a model that is run on cloud, for example. But most companies give this possibility.
All right, thank you so much. So I think one idea could bring to another statement and idea and question. We can continue it for hours and hours. Is there any last thought that you have already on your in your mind to share just in the remaining half a minute?
I would have one very, very small call. Once we are discussing about the AI, we have to also understand the role of the traditional network operators, yes, and traditional telcos, which are getting under the immense pressure of investing in the 5G, 6G development. Because without the basic high-speed networks, AI will not work to the extent which we would like to have it. I'm not talking about the ChatGPT or some solutions which we are playing with on our mobiles. I'm talking about the real use of the future AI with augmented reality, with the interactive glasses, empowering us to have great minds without showing this to the public, for example. But this, all this will not work in case we are staying with the investment which is currently at this point. And this is something what we have to keep in mind and also take a look at the challenging situation of the all network operators, traditional service providers, which are doing their best, but they have to also have the support from the AI community in addressing their challenge. All so right. This would be my also
additional very, very good point. And this, I think this would refer back to other topics that we discussed today, that all these will work only with a very strong public-private partnership. And this is the key message. Thank you so much for this great discussion. I think we can continue in a different form, but now please join me with an applause to the panel members. This was a great discussion. Thank you so much.